It's not, you know, deluxe, but it's not bad for $15 a night.
It's a prison cell.
Yes.
It's got chains on the wall.
Yeah, well, you did say entertainment, didn't you?
And this is Entertainment Plus from the ABC Chain Mail Radio. Basil Slee speaking, and we'll be back in half an hour without Tony Baldwin, Kevin Daly, Lance Curtis, Angela Webber, Adam Byrne, Jill McKay, Bill Conn, Jane Harders, Peter Whitford, and Peter Spawley. This week's special guest is Richard Moorcroft, and returning by popular demand, Booker T. Welfare, ba-boom, with the dexterous digits of Dave Colton. Music by Arthur Greenslade and the Bondi Broadcasters, but meanwhile, we're slightly out to lunch.
And now it's time for our weekly Pets Corner with our regular veterinary consultant, Bruce Losis. Welcome, Bruce.
Hello, it's nice to be with you again, and as usual I'm speaking to you from my busy surgery here in the clinic at Drainage Hills, and this week's letter comes from Sean Palping of Damp Course. That's where all those houses fell down into the old quarry a few years ago, isn't it, Sean? And you're right. Dear Bruce, my grandfather has an old cat called Fred, which has only got 3 legs. Granddad won't tell me if Fred was born like this or lost his other leg in an accident. He just laughs when I ask him and says, "It's a mystery, all right," and lights his pipe. So I would like to know, can a cat be born with only 3 legs? Well, Sean, this is a very interesting case, I must say, because I can't for the life of me understand why your granddad won't tell you how the animal lost its leg. You say he laughs when you ask him. Is this an easy, natural sort of laugh, Sean, or more a kind of hideous, sneering cackle? I'd be willing to bet it's the latter, because he also tells you to mind your own business, in effect, doesn't he? In other words, your granddad himself deprived poor old Fred of his leg. How? With an axe, or a knife, or did he run over the poor animal in his car? No, I don't think it was any of these things, Sean. I think your granddad got down on the floor in a fit of psychotic bad temper and bit Fred's leg off with those great clacking false teeth of his. Why? Well, your guess is as good as mine, Sean. The trouble with psychotics, I'm afraid, is that they don't have to have a reason. If they want to bite off a cat's leg or choke a pig or something, they just go ahead and do it. Now, getting back to your question, can cats be born with only 3 legs? Well, anything's possible, I suppose, but frankly, in this case, no. As I've already said, your granddad is simply a dangerous madman with an ungovernable urge to sink his dreadful false teeth into furry flesh. And it's high time, in my view, he was struck down. Perhaps you could think of something there yourself, Sean. I'll leave it to you. And now this is Bruce Losis saying goodbye for now, and I'd like to leave you with my impression of a farmyard chook. Yes, I've been practicing that for some time, and I'm pretty confident it's accurate.
In the tough, lawless days of the late 1800s, colonial painting in Australia was dead, slain by the wild, maverick members of the notorious Heidelberg School. Their boss, Tom Mix Roberts, otherwise known as the Merino Kid, struck terror in the hearts of all shearers.
Okay, everybody, freeze. I said freeze. This is a painting.
Oh, please, Mr. Roberts, don't make us stand here holding these rams all day long. All we want to do is a bit of shearing.
Listen here, buddy. If it weren't for me and my Heidelberg boys, Australian art would still be in the kindergarten. Is that what you want?
Oh, no fear.
Well, stand still and try to hold that ram in a more artistic way.
Ah, Lordy! It's Marshal Fred McCubbin.
How are things at the school, Fred?
Bad, Tom. Real bad.
Yeah.
I've been out on the range painting.
You mean you were practicing a modified form of impressionism, using heightened color and tone to more fully catch the pitch of Australian light?
Yeah.
Good shot.
Then I heard on the bush telegraph that...
Spit it out, Fred.
Impressionism's dead, Tom.
No.
This foreign dude called Van Gogh is rewriting the art books.
I don't believe it.
Nobody's painting rams anymore, Tom.
My God.
They reckon sunflowers are the new thing. Oh, miss.
Don't lose heart, Fred. Fight the good fight. I have a dream. But one day this country will be a place where my great-grandchildren will be able to live peacefully in small, characterless red brick homes. An identical quarter-acre block spread with big, fine police mats bearing our work, Fred, our rent.
Hallelujah.
Oh. In the meantime, Fred, I want to talk to you about this great idea I just got for a chocolate commercial. You take the evening light going down over the Yarra. He's flying on his elephant. Leotard.
Richard Moorcroft with the National News for the 14th of October, 2002 BC. The strategic arms limitation talks between the Israelites and the Egyptians continue in Cairo today. The Egyptians are demanding drastic reductions in the number of medium-range frogs deployed by the Israelites. Military experts claim that the Israelites also have enough big boils stockpiled to wipe out every firstborn all along the Nile and are capable of having 10 million locusts airborne in 7 minutes. The Middle East crisis and the Battle of Jericho escalated today. We cross now to our Middle East correspondent, Isaiah Begat of Zebedee.
Fighting increased today with the Israelites threatening to call in their crack trumpet and tambourine regiment to march around the city 7 times and bring the walls of Jericho a-tumbling down. Sources close to the Israelite high command say the commander has called upon the wrath of the Lord, so there now seems little hope of a peaceful settlement. This is Isaiah, Begat of Zebedee, Field Marshal Joshua's headquarters, Jericho.
And for news of the day's proceedings at the Sanhedrin, we cross to our political reporter, Abraham, Begat of Ezekiel.
An emergency meeting of elders was convened today when one of the tribes of Israel tried to rush through a bill that would reduce the penalty for adultery from eternal damnation to a fine of 10 shekels. It was finally defeated along party lines when all those voting for the bill were struck by thunderbolts. Another bill seeking to make oxen, sheep and chicken coveting an offence under the Ten Commandments Act passed its second reading this afternoon and will be passed up to Mount Sinai for ratification. This is Abraham, Begat of Ezekiel, Jerusalem.
There has been a bad fire at Sodom and Gomorrah. Early reports say that both cities have been seriously destroyed, with damage estimated to be in the region of 500,000 shekels. An eyewitness said the fire was apparently started by a thunderbolt.
Did you see what happened, Mr. Lott?
Well, no, actually. I was facing the other way at the time. I just heard this big bang.
I believe your wife saw the whole thing.
Yeah, she did, but I'm afraid she's incommunicado at the moment.
Incommunicado?
Yeah, it's a type of cooking salt.
While biblical writers sought through the rubble, looking for clues for the blast, latest reports say that a fundamentalist religious sect, upset at the city's low moral standards, has claimed responsibility for the blast. Meanwhile, work continues today on the freeway between the Red Sea and the Promised Land. That's all for now. In the extended bulletin tonight, we'll be talking to Joseph of the Coat of Many Colours, today named as one of the Middle East's worst-dressed men, and we have an exclusive interview with Daniel, who's hoping to break the World Lion's Den endurance record. And now, here's Alice Fay with the weather.
The snow is snowing, the wind is blowing, but I can weather the storm.
Hello. I'm here in the car park of the Casa del Flamethrower Shopping Center in El Salvador, and I'm talking with Mr. Pedro Gomez, who's agreed to try our new Zurich 86. Here you are, Mr. Gomez.
Muchas gracias, señor.
Well, Pedro, how does it compare with your old rifle?
Well, it's a very light. I like the trigger mechanism and the fire spread so evenly.
So you think you'll be using the new Zurich 86 in your next guerrilla's engagement?
Oh, see, definitely. It's much nicer than the AK-47 I usually buy.
Well, there you are. The new Zurich 86 from Swiss Arms Dealers International. Remember, 150 years of neutrality help us to help you blow each other to bits.
Approved by the Geneva Convention and the Tehran Housewives Association.
Hello there. wonderful to be here. I've been around the world in a plane. I've settled revolutions in Spain. The North Pole I have charted. Still I can't get started with you. On the golf course, I'm under par. Metro Goldwyn has asked me to star. I've got a house, a showplace. Still I can't get no place with you. You're so supreme. Lyrics I write of you. Dream. Each day and night of you. Scheme. Just for the sight of you. But honey, what good does it do? I've been consulted by Franklin D.
A date which will live in infamy.
Greta Garbo's had me to tea.
We want to be alone.
Still I'm brokenhearted, 'cause I can't get started with you.
I didn't understand a word of that.
That's understandable. I share your opinion.
But if you find that understandable, how can you share my opinion when I don't understand a word of that?
It is difficult, dear. I understand that.
I know you bloody understand that. That was my point.
But how can that be your point when you just said you don't understand that?
I didn't say that. I said I didn't understand a word of that.
Which word of that didn't you understand?
That.
That's all right, then. What have you liked about this show so far?
Oh, this and that.
What is this all about?
I'm not sure. I never wanted to be a professor of linguistics, you know. All I ever really wanted to do as a child was to be a fighter pilot and strafe refugee columns. My parents warped me. I walked into their bedroom one night and they were doing that.
I'll drink to that.
It's time once again to smile, laugh and shed a tear as we follow the outback flight paths of the Young Flying Doctors.
Calling Dr. Rockman! Come in, Dr. Rockman! This is Wallaby Station. Over.
Dr. Rockman here. What's the problem, Wallaby? Over.
Oh, Rocky! It's my heart! You're breaking it in two! Over!
Oh, so it's you, Betty! Get a grip on yourself. You know I can't see you anymore. Over.
In that case, give me back my love letters. Over.
If that's what you want, Betty, I'll fly over next Thursday and airdrop them. Over.
It's Nurse Melanie, isn't it? She's the one who's come between us. Over.
Of course not. We just have a close working relationship, you know. Over.
Come off it, Rocky. I've seen her skywriting love notes to you. And the lipstick smears on your Cessna are a real giveaway. Don't you know how I feel about you? When you flew over last Monday, didn't you see how I spelled out I love Rocky in hay bales? Over.
Yeah, very touching. But I happen to know that I'm not the only plane in your sky. Over.
What? Over.
Don't think I haven't heard about your affair with Dr. Andrews. The way flying GP like me isn't good enough for you, isn't it? You have to have a flying orthopedic surgeon. Well, what's he got that I haven't got? Over.
Since you mention it, he does have a few things that you lack, like compassion, like charm, like a night flying license. I was sick and tired of going on dates with you and having to fly back before sunset. Over.
But I have feelings too, Betty. When I first found out about you and Dr. Andrews, I thought my next house call would be a kamikaze mission. Over.
There's still time, Rocky. We could try again. Over.
Over my dead body. It's all over. Over.
Rocky! Rocky! Come in, Dr. Rockman. Oh, I don't think I can bear this. I'm cracking up. Oh, somebody, if you're out there, please send the flying psychiatrist over.
Next week on The Young Flying Doctors, Betty puts a bomb in Rocky's hangar, Dr. Andrews is hijacked by a team of obstetricians, and Nurse Melanie loses a propeller over Oodnadatta. Don't miss it. The Young Flying Doctors.
There we are, nice and clean. Hello, I'm Barry Gordon. Welcome to another edition of I Changed My Life. With me in the studio is Jasmine Burke.
Hi.
And Kevin O'Leary.
Hello.
Kevin, what have you been up to in the recent months? I know you've been up the North Coast. What have you come back with to tell us about?
Well, I've been into candle making.
I see. You brought some with you.
Yes, I have. Yes, this is a very long burner, that one. That'll go for, some people say, eternity.
It's a big candle, Kevin. That must take a lot of wax.
It's bloody huge, Barry.
Thank you, Kevin. And turning now to Jasmine.
Hi, Barry.
Jasmine, you've been over there in Wall Street for the past week and a half. Tell us, what's going on in the world of religious stocks and shares?
Wet rebirthing. I'm heavily into wet rebirthing.
That's on the up, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we should buy or sell?
What do you know about wet rebirthing, Jasmine?
I know as much as any tanker driver.
Now, Kevin. Kevin, you've been a tanker driver. You've been all sorts of things.
That's a lie, Barry.
Now, hang on, Kevin. Now, I know that you have been a tanker driver.
Once I drove a tank for a friend of mine who had just got out of the army.
And what was inside the tank?
Milk.
I see. Anybody had any other sorts of religious sort of insights or breakthroughs or...
Well, prosperity counseling is on the up and up.
Prosperity counseling,
that's
yes.
right. Mm-hmm. The Dow Jones is looking good, especially in the area of wet rebirthing.
Just a minute, Jasmine. What do you know about wet rebirthing? Do you understand anything about the cosmic unilateral consciousness?
What are you saying, Barry, you ugly little twerp?
Well, we're going back to
There's
wet rebirthing.
There's no point in being elitist about this.
Elitist? I wouldn't even put you on the same plane as me, cosmic or otherwise. BOAC, Pan Am.
That could be wounding, Jasmine. That's a little bit...
Oh,
direct.
Shut up, Barry.
And that's where we must leave. I changed my life. Thank you to Kevin O'Leary.
I'm still here, Barry.
And thank you to Jasmine Burke.
It's not my problem he's still here, Barry.
Good Jasmine.
I've just said goodbye.
From across the seas, around the globe, out of the outback, and into your local theatre, it's the Cooey Newsreel. At the mouth of the mighty Yarra, and the streets of the sprawling southern city are packed with yawning revelers for the start of this year's Carnival of Boredom. A feature of the carnival is the parade of floats, captured by the Cooey cameras as it crawls down St. Kilda Road in steady drizzling rain. Here comes the queen of the carnival, pretty Raylene O'Dell, asleep on her red brick throne. And look, there's the Melbourne weatherman, wearing a raincoat, tartan scarf and shorts, and carrying a hot water bottle and beach umbrella. And last but not least comes the Sir Henry Bolt float, complete with a flock of prime merino sheep, standing atop a giant copy of the Bible. Melbourne's Carnival of Boredom takes the streets by storm. Jakarta and Indonesia's throbbing capital host the Southeast Asian Mutual Understanding Conference, CIMAC, which opens with a speech by well-known Australian academic, Professor Barry Football. Delegates stamp and spit politely as Professor Football tests his theory of abuse as a form of international therapy. The Japanese delegate, Mr. Ogoshi Rawfishi, replies to enthusiastic booing and wrestling. And the Cooey camera goes in for a close-up look at the curious mouth-boxing technique of Thailand's representative, Mr. Sandtrap Seesaw Boring. Wow, this looks like turning into a free-for-all. Whoa, fellas, the referee's blown his whistle. Fun and games at an international conference in Indonesia's swinging capital. The Middle East. And daring Cooey cameraman Brian Gould is on the spot as fundamentalist Muslim Miites battle right-wing Christian lozengists in the desert of the warrior snails. Both groups see the desert as a holy shrine and are prepared to fight to the last man. Boiling camel fat blazes across the cloudless sky as the Miites launch yet another offensive. But the lozengists reply with giant loaves of unleavened bread, driving them back. The rolling dunes are littered with the debris of total war. A chariot crushed by bread, another overturned in a swamp of congealed fat. All under the forlornly drifting smoke of thousands of American cigarettes. And here's Brian Gould himself, photographed drinking his lunch by a militiaman who was sadly killed by a stray loaf the following night. The irony of modern war in the desert of the warrior snails. On a sunnier note, we visit northern New South Wales, where alternative lifestylers are harvesting their latest crop. Yes, it's tomatoes, but wait for it, without the tomatoes. No, you're not seeing things. These rows of tall hybrid plants mean big business. After cutting, they're hung in special drying sheds, then packed in green plastic bags and shipped south to be used as deodorant incense in schools, factories and homes. We're sick of our image as dole brudgers, say the alternatives. And they've grown a new cash crop to prove it.
The Cooey Newsreel, across the globe, out of the outback, and into your theatre.
Welcome to the world of wines. Today, I'd like to talk to you about wines around the world. First, let's look at French wines. Here's a typical example.
Well, why should we not let off our atomic bombs in the South Pacific? After all, we discovered l'Australie, those Aussie bastards...
Now, this sort of wine has a really big nose, and it's usually in the air, so typically French. Now, let's sample an English wine.
Eh, but I wish I were back home in Wigan. The weather's too hot here, the beer's too cold and...
Now, we can easily distinguish between the provincial bouquet of an English wine and a French Grand Cru, partly because of the accent, and partly because the English don't let off berms in the South Pacific. They let them off in the middle of Australia. Let's contrast these with one of the more sturdy German wines.
If it wasn't for those damn Yankees, we would have won the war, and I wouldn't be living under an assumed name in St. Kilda. It's all the
guttural,
fault of that dumb...
middle palate, with a lingering afterburn. The typical characteristics of the German wine. But what of our own classic Australian wines? Here's a South Australian vintage.
I mean, why shouldn't we sell our uranium yellow cake to the frogs to make their berms? I mean, thousands of jobs are in jeopardy in Roxby Downs alone.
Contrast this with the more robust, full-bodied Melbourne gripe.
We all want more money, always going to bash you. And I wouldn't want to bash you, but I'd really enjoy it.
Finally, let's close this survey with a look at a New South Wales wine. These are very distinctive for their peevish acidic quality. They're also very expensive. To afford this type of wine, you'll need to have either money or influence.
Hello? Hello? Geez, someone's been tapping my phone again. Don't kickbacks work any longer?
Well, the story is a ditty about a Sheila, young and pretty. She finished school but couldn't get a job. Well, there's not much enjoyment on unemployment. It's enough to make any girl sit down and sob. But she went to Bondi, there met a blonde guy. The zinc cream on his nose was petal pink. And south of the sewer, well, he tried to do her. She said, I'm not as desperate as you think. Because in Bondi, Bondi, any girl can get a blonde guy. Blonde guy. In the surf, he's like a hero. On the sand, he gets a zero. Or even less. Well, lucky at Guido's, with coffee on his Speedos, was a Parramatta grocer with a wink. Well, he thought he was a stallion as he rattled his medallions. She nicked off to the Astra for a drink. And up on the stage in a heavy metal rage, an aging rock musician with a limp. Well, he sang of love in vain and oldies in the rain and all that stuff that interests boring wimps. Because in Bondi, Bondi, there's some pretty people passing by. You can win some, you can lose some. You might even get to choose one. It's better than just looking on Bondi, Bondi. At all the pretty blonde girls and guys. Well, the sewerage is fresh, it's within your reach. You'll even find it on the beach. In
scalpel, swab, microphone. Hello, glad you could join us. And those of you who tuned in last week will remember that we had the chest cavity opened up. So I'd like you all to get your patience out now and be ready to go on to the next stage. At this point, we slice through the pericardium, exposing the heart itself. Now take a scalpel, or clean sharp kitchen knife will do, and with a slow downward motion, make an incision of approximately 12 to 16 centimeters. Good. Now, it's very important at this stage to tie off the large artery on the left. And then we pull back the membrane and... that's my left, by the way. I mean, not the left-hand side of the patient. Yeah. Well, now, beneath the membrane, you'll find... this is, of course, assuming that you're standing at the right-hand side of the patient, as I am. I really should have been more specific, shouldn't I? Yeah. Oh, dear. Well, if you're having trouble finding the artery, just look for the spurting blood. There should be quite a lot of it by now. I'm not sure if it's really a very good idea.
Hello and welcome to part three of our profile on Australia's internationally acclaimed film director, Thelma Moody, creator of such contemporary classics as Picnic at Ethel Perkins Reserve, The Man from Perkins River, and Careful, He Might Ethel Perkins You. Today, we present an exclusive report direct from the location of Mrs. Moody's most ambitious film to date, George and Beryl's Wedding, also known as No Bouquets for Ethel.
It's dawn here at the Auto Records, and the crew have just set up for the lavish wedding reception sequence. Seven camels are dramatically silhouetted against a shimmering backdrop of the local bottle mart, where I can't help noticing the this week only offer of a dozen cream sherry for $5.95. And as the mistress of modern cinema steps somewhat unsteadily from her Honda Civic, it looks as if she has already taken advantage of that unique offer. Blood-red smoke belches into the crisp dawn air from a smoke machine. No, I'm sorry, that's not a smoke machine. It's coming from Mrs. Moody's Honda Civic. It appears Mrs. Moody has driven all the way from Broken Hill with the handbrake on. Now, on the command from Thelma's assistant, the 200 extras wave their sombreros as the three stars, Brian Perkins, Tony Perkins, and, of course, the diva, Ethel Perkins, take their places on the sacrificial altar. Thelma Moody raises the megaphone to her lips. She is about to give the first directorial order in what will surely be an edifying entertainment experience. The crowd is suddenly hushed. Here she goes.
I'm coming, everybody!
Lunch! Oh, hello. We've been slightly out to lunch with a script by Tony Baldwin, Kevin Daly, Peter Smalley, Ken Matthews, Steve Johnson, Colin Bowles, Lance Curtis, Angela Webber, Adam Bone, Doug McLeod and John Collins. The Cooey consultant was Robert Parker. The production assistant was Linda Hughes. Script editor Julianne Ford. Sound effects John Farkas. Technical production was by Warwick Maber. Produced by Kevin Daly and Tony Baldwin. And me, Melvin Wimp, was serving tables 4, 5 and 93.
They moved closer. Closer.
Who are you?
I'm an explorer.
I didn't give you the liberty to kiss me.
I wasn't kissing you. I was kissing your wife.
Deirdre, do you know what...
Stephen.
Deirdre, have you met Stephen?
No, I'm charmed.
No, you're not. You're to Deirdre.
Well, nobody's perfect.
Stephen?
Yes, old chap.
Do you do anything for dinner?
Would I bag myself a lion?
Well, how about lunch?